And we're joined once again on The Scoop today by Brad Gelber of the Bills Wire, taking a look at some of the NFL head coaching jobs that have been filled over the past week or so, and also taking a look at the playoff games coming up this weekend. Brad, as always, a pleasure. Happy Friday to you. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Seth. Happy Friday to you as well.
Let's look at some of these coaching changes that we've seen, and some have been received with praise, some have not. And I want to start off with the one that that caused quite a bit of a head scratch for you, that being the Miami Dolphins job, the most recent fill, and that going to, actually, I take that back, New York Jets job. He was at the Miami Dolphins, that being Adam Gase, the former head coach of the Dolphins. So he goes to the New York Jets to take over as their head coach, to be paired with Sam Darnold. But maybe not a situation that that should have been, considering how things ended in Miami. I know you've got some feelings on how this turned out. What was your reaction to Adam Gase headed to New York?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was one of those things where I was just shocked that he was given another opportunity this quickly, especially within the same division. You know, the Bills being in the AFC East, we got to see quite a bit of him, of Adam Gase. And, you know, look, I get the whole premise behind it is they want an offensive-minded coach. They come off of Todd Bowles, prior to that Rex Ryan. So they have guys that are defense first. They've struggled, obviously, the past few seasons, and they're looking to kind of have a guy that can groom their young quarterback. So when you look at it from that perspective, Adam Gase is this supposed quarterback whisperer, and, you know, a lot of people point to his record with Ryan Tannehill in versus when Ryan Tannehill was injured. So I get all that, but, you know, coming off of what just happened with him in Miami in the same division, players openly, you know, chastising Adam Gase. I've really never seen that sort of reaction. Usually players, even if they don't like a head coach, there's a difference between liking a coach and respecting him. And to me, none of the players in Miami respected him. And you got guys like Jarvis Landry, who obviously is now plays for the Cleveland Browns. You got Jordan Phillips, who plays for the Bills. Guys that are openly mocking Adam Gase on Twitter and Instagram and things like that when he was fired, celebrating, calling, you know, just mocking him. And I've just never really seen a reaction like that before. So to me, there's something going on in that Miami locker room that caused him to lose the respect of his players. So for the Jets to kind of just ignore that and decide, okay, we're going to bring him into a locker room that has a lot of young players like a Sam Darnold in it, impressionable, you know, guys that need a strong leader in there. It was just one of those moves that really left me scratching my head. And I get it. You know, if you look at the other head coaches, which I'm sure we'll talk about, there wasn't, you know, this star-studded list of available guys. And I know Mike McCarthy was another guy discussed as well. But from what I've heard and read and things like that, it seems like really what the Jets were trying to find was that offensive mind that was kind of that young, innovative type, but someone who also had some head coaching experience. So they didn't want, you know, that coach has been around forever and maybe kind of out of the loop, but they didn't want to go with like a Cliff Kingsbury, who's a coach with no NFL real head coaching experience. So Gase has those three seasons now in Miami, so he's kind of in the middle there. He's still a young guy. So I get it logistically, but to me, you know, when you lose the respect of a locker room that quickly, it just kind of leaves me scratching my head why New York decided, okay, this is the guy for us at this point.
Yeah, that's well said. It seems like there's something that we have not been told as to how that played out in Miami, but it'll remain to be seen if he goes the route of say Arizona, where he's there for a year and things don't play out. He could end up being fired just as quickly, and then the Jets maybe are trying to find their Cliff Kingsbury, who is now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. This one is getting a lot of buzz throughout the NFL because of the fact that Kingsbury really didn't have a sterling, shiny record in college. But again, fits the mold of a young offensive coach. And I mean, pairing him with Josh Rosen seems like a good idea. Is this one that will have success, or is this a situation of maybe the Cardinals reaching a little bit too far into the bag to try to replicate what everybody else is doing?
Yeah, you know, to me, I said this on Twitter, I think teams are just trying too hard to find the next Sean McVay, and I get it, you know, what he's done, McVay's done in L.A. has been, you know, great for the most part. Obviously, they've struggled a little bit down the stretch here, but for the most part, he's really been that innovative offensive mind that seems to be what the new NFL is all about. But, you know, again, it's just one of those things that feels like a bit of a stretch. Obviously, Cliff Kingsbury has experience coaching in college, and then, you know, he was brought on only a few months ago as USC's offensive coordinator, then decides, like, from what I read, I guess he's going to pay for his own buyout out of USC, since they were not going to let him out of his contract to go to the NFL. So he has to pay for his own buyout for the opportunities, and then he ends up getting this job. So, you know, will it work? That remains to be seen. Another young quarterback, as you said, in Josh Rosen. If they can find that magic that McVay and Goff found for the most part, then it will look like a great move. But it just feels like these teams are trying so hard to find Sean McVay rather than finding the right fit for that organization. And that, to me, you know, look at the Colts with what happened with Josh McDaniels bailing on them, and they end up with Frank Reich, who has done an amazing job in Indianapolis, and they seriously look like they could be a threat to make it to the, you know, AFC Championship game now. And, you know, that to me was a great fit for them, and they lucked out by having McDaniels back out of that job. They weren't just looking for, you know, quote-unquote Sean McVay. They were looking for someone who fit that organization. Now, granted, they kind of lucked into the fact that things didn't work out with McDaniels, and would things have worked better if he did take that job? We'll never know. But I just think teams need to do a better job of focusing on the fits for their organization versus just trying to jam a guy in there that kind of fits the mold of the new NFL. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But to me, it seems a little bit like a forced move, in my opinion.
We now get a chance to see what Bruce Arians can do in Tampa Bay, as we've seen a lot of different things happen with these coach openings. The new wave with a bunch of these jobs, and then the Adam Gase situation in New York. Now we get Bruce Arians, a guy who was not a head coach until later on in life. He was successful in Arizona and now gets a chance in Tampa Bay. Do you like the fit for Arians? I personally, I'm a fan of Bruce Arians. I know his style is a little abrasive sometimes, but with what Mike Zimmer has done in Minnesota, I think we become pretty used to that. Do you like the fit for Bruce Arians in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, Arians is a good coach. I think he proved it, as you said, in his prior job there in Arizona. So I like that move, and I think, to me, the Bucs did kind of what I was just talking about. They kind of went with a guy that they felt could kind of take over things and really steer the ship in the direction they're looking to go. You know, Albert Breer had an interesting tweet. He laid out the ages of all the coaching hires, and Bruce Arians is on, you know, one end at 66 years old, and then you have Zach Taylor is, you know, reported to be the Bengals' first choice there, and he's 35 years old. So, you know, that's quite a difference in age. They're 31 years. So, you know, I think, though, that they made the right move to not try to force anything like I just talked about and try and get that young and innovative mind. They're taking a coach with a track record of success, and they're going to hope that he can kind of turn things around in Tampa there. So, yeah, I definitely like that move, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, with their quarterback situation and how things work out, whether it's Jameis Winston and, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick still there, if they end up re-signing him or kind of where they go in that area. But, you know, I'm interested to see how he does stepping in there, given his track record.
Brad, the final one that I want to go into is a guy who did not get a coaching job, that being Mike McCarthy. And I know we were talking about this the other day. It seemed like he really wanted to go to New York. They went in a different direction. So now he's going to sit out for a year. You laid out a pretty interesting fit that I think could play pretty well if they end up going that route. I kind of joked that, hey, if Mike Zimmer ends up getting fired, maybe McCarthy goes to Minnesota. Hit me with that that fit that you had laid out for McCarthy that could potentially work out after this next season.
Yeah. Well, this is, I want to make it clear, I read this, so it wasn't me just being innovative and coming up with this, but I saw on Twitter, I don't remember now where, but I think I sent it to you maybe, but anyways, they had laid out a possibility where, you know, McCarthy has said now, since the Jets job is off the table, he's going to take the season and spend it with his family and then looking to come back in 2020. And one of the outlets had said what about the possibility of him ending up in Seattle with the Seahawks come next year after. So that'd be, you know, I think interesting, as you and I discussed with Russell Wilson there, and you know, his ability to work those two in tandem and what would happen to Pete Carroll at that point. But you know, that could be an interesting fit. I know you've mentioned to me the possibility of him maybe ending up in Minnesota at some point, and you know, I think we've seen this before where coaches take some time, but if you have that name, you have the presence, you have kind of a track record, you're never off the table completely. So we've seen coaches go away. I mean, how many years has it been for Bill Cowher, and we still hear him come up almost every year team that could be interested in him. And so, you know, you get these guys, these coaches that go into the media route when they're out of coaching for a while because they have that knowledge and that experience. But then, you know, look at John Gruden. I mean, he was gone for a long time, and Oakland decided to pour everything into getting him to come out of retirement and go into coaching for them. And he kind of always hinted at that he'd like to get back into coaching. So I don't think coaches are ever really done when they're done. And Mike McCarthy was very straightforward that he would like to return as coach in 2020. So it'll be interesting to see how many openings there are come that point. And we know every year there are some. So we'll have to see if there's any that he considers worthy of, you know, of his consideration at that point.
One more before we move on to the playoff games this weekend. Just when we thought the Antonio Brown situation couldn't have any further wrinkles added, the Pittsburgh Steelers now have essentially doubled down on Brown's status into next year, as team president Art Rooney II telling the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that he doesn't envision a scenario in which Antonio Brown is on the team next year. So this has really escalated quickly from the final week of the season to where we're at now. Is there any possibility that a team can pony up enough to be able to trade for a player the caliber of Antonio Brown?
Yeah, you know, you and I discussed this a few weeks ago, just in terms of, you know, a team possibly doing a trade like this. And I don't want to say never, because we've seen trades recently where guys end up that you don't think can get moved, they do end up getting moved. And I remember here in Buffalo, people didn't ever think Marcell Dareus was going to be able to be traded with his contract. And lo and behold, the Bills basically gave him away for free to the Jaguars just so they would take that contract off their hands. So, yeah, I think that especially when you look at a player of his caliber, now, of course, the recent drama is going to probably turn some teams off. But at times, you know, this, as of recent as this past year, Antonio Brown is regarded as, you know, if not the best receiver in the NFL, top 3-5 for sure up there. So I think a team's going to look at that if he is truly available and say, you know, I think teams kind of have this, you know, I don't want to say arrogance, but it is arrogance in a sense that their coaching staff, their front office, their culture, their locker room can kind of change a player, maybe if they're a me first kind of guy, and put them in a situation where they don't allow them to be a distraction. And then if they can do that, then you have all the talent in the world in Antonio Brown. Still young enough, so I think that teams will consider it for sure. You know, I wrote an article today actually for the Bills Wire that discussed two different outlets mentioning the Bills as a possible fit to trade for Antonio Brown, given, you know, the assets they have and draft capital and the cap space, but does not seem like really a culture fit from a Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean standpoint. But as I just said, if they feel that the Bills locker room is strong enough to handle a personality like that. And he certainly would be the unquestioned number one wide receiver on the Bills. They have a lack of talent at that position and would give Josh Allen that, you know, bona fide target that they're lacking. It could make sense. Do I see it happening? No. But, you know, there are teams out there, I'm sure, that will pick up the phone and call to find out what, you know, what would even the asking price be from the Steelers, because, you know, the Steelers are going to want to haul for him, even though they're kind of in an uncomfortable situation now with their owner coming out and saying that. It kind of puts them, it handicaps them a bit, because now teams are going to say, well, your owner's saying he's not coming back, so we're not going to give you the house for him. Like, we got to meet in the middle somewhere. So it was interesting to me that Art Rooney made those comments and kind of hamstrung his front office a bit, but you know, it looks like at this point they're just emotionally ready to move on from him.
Brad, let's talk about the divisional round of playoffs this weekend, and plenty of intriguing matchups going on with this weekend's slate of games. Starting off with Saturday's matchups, Indianapolis at Kansas City, and then Dallas at the Los Angeles Rams. A lot of intrigue to these matchups, and most notably with Kansas City, Andy Reid's playoff past, definitely a checkered one, but he's got a offense that is humming along in the Chiefs, and they go up against the Colts in the first game. Who do you like between Indianapolis and Kansas City?
You know, if you asked me this last week, I would tell you Kansas City hands down. I just, you know, it's so hard with their offense to keep pace, and even good teams just have trouble because it's just, they're just so explosive with Patrick Mahomes and that offense there, and especially being home in Kansas City for this game. But, you know, the Colts are one of those sneaky teams that just continue to get better and better and better, and now they've lost one game, you know, in the last 11 games. They've just been on such a tear. They're the hottest team by far in the NFL. They keep finding ways to win. Andrew Luck looks fantastic. Their defense looks really good. And Kansas City's defense is awful. So that's the one thing to me, aside from Andy Reid's, you know, checkered past in the playoffs, their defense just being so bad versus Andrew Luck in that Colts offense, I think that the Colts are able to keep up possibly with Kansas City because of how bad the Chiefs defense is. So, you know, I'm stuck on this one right now. I don't know if I can say I trust the Colts to come through, but at the same time I don't feel as comfortable as I did with Kansas City a week ago. So if you're gonna put me on the spot, I guess I'll go out there and say I'll take the Colts in this one. But
okay.
I don't, that's just me, I guess, taking a flyer on them here. I think it'll be a good game regardless, but I think there's a lot that should worry Chiefs fans about this team, despite how good their offense really is.
What about Dallas and the Rams? The Rams have been struggling over the last few weeks of the season. They still ended up as the number two seed in the NFC. Do the Cowboys have enough of a ball control offense to be able to hold the Rams in check? Can they win a game on the road against the vaunted Rams?
So last week you asked me about the Cowboys, and I told you I didn't believe in them, and then they came out and won. You know, I still don't believe in them, and I don't know what it's going to take for me to finally believe in them. Maybe they win this game, and I'll finally give them credit. But, you know, I know we just talked about the Rams kind of sliding down the stretch here and the Sean McVay, all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of backwards since I just gave you reasons why I think the Colts will win in Kansas City. I just don't think that the Cowboys are going to come through in L.A. I think the Rams, I think maybe the end of the season there was a might be a blessing in disguise in terms of a bit of a wake-up call, because sometimes teams, you know, imagine if the Rams went into this 15-1 and they just kind of cruised through to the end of the season there. They may be thinking, you know, there's no way we're bound for the Super Bowl. This is it. Like, this is our year. Instead, they've had to face a little bit of adversity, which they had none of that earlier in the year. So perhaps that kind of has grounded them a little bit and forced them to focus with this off week heading into the playoffs now. I'm just going to take the Rams there. I think, you know, they'll figure it out and McVay will have them ready to go. And I just think that, you know, I don't want to call it luck for the Cowboys because they've earned their way to this point, but I just think that their kind of Cinderella run, if you will, is going to run out, and I think that the Rams will take care of business.
On to Sunday's games, the Los Angeles Chargers taking on the New England Patriots. Chargers, and we've discussed this off and on here throughout the season, Chargers one of the most underrated teams in the NFL by far, 12-4. They had a great season. They beat the Baltimore Ravens, although had to kind of hang on at the end. But they go to Foxborough to take on the Patriots. This New England team, not maybe as vaunted as in years past. Is that enough for the Chargers to come away with a win, or are we going to see New England get back to what works for them? Who do you have in this matchup?
You know, you've heard me all season say that I will not pick against Tom Brady and the Patriots, especially at home, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the Chargers because I just think that they are so good in every facet of the game. And I think in the past, when we've seen the Chargers slip up in the playoffs, I think a lot of it was they had a weakness or they had an off game from Phillip Rivers, or there was always something that just seemed to uncharacteristically kind of pop up and derail them. I just think they're playing too well overall. I think Rivers, you know, he hasn't been great of late, but I think that he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL. He never gets mentioned in, you know, the discussions with the greats and all that. And I think that he's had such a great overall career. He's just kind of flown under the radar due to, you know, lack of playoff success. So I'm going to take Philip Rivers and the Chargers in this one. I think, you know, Tom Brady has had uncharacteristic play throughout the season. He's turned the ball over more than we've seen in the past. I think guys like Rob Gronkowski just have not been the typical dominant self that we've seen. And I just think that if ever there was a season where, you know, granted, they did what they had to do. They won 11 games. They won the division again. They have home field in this round of the playoffs, so they did a lot of things right. But they just too often looked vulnerable, as you said. And I think if ever there's a year for them to lose at home, I think this is the start of it versus this team. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Chargers in this one.
I like it. Final matchup between the vaunted Philadelphia Eagles, Nick Foles and company leading the Eagles once again on another playoff march, taking on the number one seed New Orleans Saints. Saints also had not as strong of a finish as they were playing throughout the course of the early part of the season. Then again, really didn't have much to play for at all down the stretch. This Eagles team just something different about him with Foles as quarterback. Is that enough for them to pull an upset against the New Orleans Saints, or are the Saints going to roll at home?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Saints. I just don't think, you know, I know there's been magic with Nick Foles in the playoffs and all of this, but I just cannot see the Eagles going into New Orleans and, you know, the Superdome there and that atmosphere and with how, you know, you're going up against Drew Brees, one of the best of all time. I just think that this is the Saints' game to lose here. And, of course, the Eagles could come out and shock everyone and win another game. And at that point, you're really going to have a serious discussion what you do at quarterback for the Eagles here going forward. But I think that it's just I can't pick against Drew Brees and the Saints at home here. You know, the other thing is in terms of the Eagles is – I don't know if you heard this or anyone listening heard this, but apparently Golden Tate on that, you know, wonderful touchdown catch late in the game there for the Eagles that put them ahead, he admitted after the game that he did not hear the play call and actually had to, on the fly, kind of make up the route he was going to run. So that just kind of goes to show you this ridiculous, you know, luck or whatever you want to call it for the Eagles in the playoffs with Nick Foles, that they just seem to always come out on the right end of things. And the fact that he was just running a route he kind of made up and it worked and Nick Foles hit him for the touchdown, I mean, you know, what more could possibly go right for them? So at some point, you have to think that things are going to even out and it's not going to go their way, but maybe not, but I'm going to stick with the Saints here for my prediction for this one.
Okay. Well, we'll see how things play out when we break it all down on the show again next week. Brad, as always, pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us today, and enjoy the games this weekend. We'll see who's still standing when we talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Seth, and looking forward to it.